So now, with 10 minutes or so, I want to show you what we're writing on. That's the two talks, out of three. Jan's initiative, it's called the CS10K project, if you want to have a one phrase, CS10K by 2015. Dan's pilot, CS10 right here, CS10K, CS10. And BYOB. So Scratch is this outstanding language, but what's the number one problem with Scratch?
No blocks.
There's no blocks. You can't call functions. You can't make a function. You can't do recursion. Because if you can't name something, you can't call it from itself. So along comes a thing called BYOB. And BYOB was written by Jens Monig. And Jens was somebody who attended the Scratch conference and liked it and kind of wanted to take, he's before the Scratch team. And he said, let me just, you know, fork a piece of that software and start on my own and kind of add some cool features. So he added how to make a block. We love it. So you go over here and you say this, and I can make a new sprite. Let me make a new sprite just to clear this up. Here's a new sprite. Let me import. Here's a random new sprite there. There's a new sprite, and it's an empty script window. And I say variables, and I say variables list, and then go over here and say make a block. And I can now choose a category. This is all his work. Here's a category, and I can say. Here's an operation, and I can say it's a predicate, and I'd say it's a NAND. It's a NAND of, you know, say X and Y. Here's a NAND gate, and how does it work? What's NAND? NAND is not AND, right? So report, not, I drag it here, not AND. I drag that to there, I drag X down here, I'm just making this on the fly. And here's Y here. And there's my NAND gate. Love it. I just made a NAND gate. Where does it live? It lives down here. It lives in the same. I told it was an operator, so it's right here. And this NAND is used. I probably could. I probably should have moved the X to the side. I'll leave it like that. NAND X and Y. So you probably should be a, you know, X NAND Y. But we'll look at that. So here's NAND, and I can now drag true, and I can now drag false, and I can see what would happen. And I can double-click NAND, and NAND of true and false is true. Just and would have been false because one of those guys was false, so and it's true. That's cool. I just made a block. It looks just like the other blocks. Just have to follow this line. That's awesome. Okay. So, BYOB added functions. We said that's a great start, but, and this began a really wonderful discussion of all the things we would love to have in Scratch. Given all the power that we had in Scheme and the limitations of Scratch. Some of the limitations of Scratch, well, you used to be able to make lists, and there were these global lists over here. That, you know, people want to scratch a little bit, you make global lists, that's all you ever had. You can't just make a list on the fly and return it. You can't make a list as an input. But oh yeah, you can now do that with Bootstrap. So, how about, let me show you this now, this main sprite one. And this is an amazing demo. Let me hide sprite two. I think it's looks and hide, so she's gone. All right, now. Let me show you this amazing app. So, this, first I'm going to show you recursion, which we couldn't do before VRB, and we're going to show you some really powerful things, all in one mini demo. Okay. So, this is, let me get the down arrow. Big, yeah, okay. This is, I think Gobo, how is his name? Gobo? Is there a sprite icon? He is going to turn left, that's what he does. When the arrow is clicked, when the green arrow is clicked, go to, can you see this? I'll zoom in. Okay. Go to this point, bottom center, clear, put your pen down, point direction zero, which is straight up, and call V. So what's V, you might ask? Good question. I will click edit to see what V is. And here's what V does. Let's see if we can see. Okay. And I'm the sprite in the bottom center, so I can be V. Turn left 44 degrees, okay? Now, move forward 69. Why 69? Why this isn't 70? I don't know. It's not my script, but I want to keep it there. Move forward some amount. Run any of the ends. Wait, what are you talking about? Run any of the ends. How can you run an end? Wait, end is a list. Any of ends chooses something from this list. What's in this list? It's a function. Wait. You are 100 miles from this in regular Scratch. You can't do this. You can't run something. Second of all, you can't put functions in lists. Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah. These functions are now in here. What do they do? Well, let's look at them. Hex. Let's go see what hex does. So I think we have to go to, is it motion, I think? And go to the bottom, and here's hex. What does hex do? It just draws a hexagon. It's pretty easy, right? Repeat 6 times, move and turn. Draws a hexagon. And you can see what they are. There's a square, so draw a hexagon is a hexagon, by the way. Okay, easy. Draw a square or draw a star. These are all just little teeny scripts that need to draw the picture, okay? So, let's see what it does now. We're still looking at V, right? What does V do? V says, run, choose from one of these three, hex, square, or star, do it. But what it does is it leaves the cursor where it started, like it goes blah, and draws and comes back where it was. So it doesn't change the state of what it does. That's what you usually do in graphic drawing. In turtle graphics, you don't really change, right? Otherwise, the turtles keep moving around, right? So you draw it, but you come back to where you were. Then, move back, so go forward, draw the same, but you come back to where you were, right? Come back, turn 90, go forward, do it again. Run any of it ends, and then come back, and go back to 45, so now you're pointing straight up and down, now you're ready to go. That's what V does. So, let's try it. Here's ends. Let's run it. What do you get? I get, this is star, by the way, this is any, this is non-determinism, right? It chooses one of these guys randomly. So, star and hexagon, okay? And star, star, and square, square. You can kind of run and say, like, what do you guess it's going to be this time? Who says, Thursday, we can vote, maybe this, okay? Now, what's over here? Look at this. When up our arrow is pressed, if the length of ends is less than 4, that's what it is now. So when it's small, when I'm down at this, like, only these guys, right, hex, square, and star case, only when that's true, do what? Add the script V to ends. Look how beautiful and clear it is. Let's try it. Up arrow, bam. What am I adding? V and V. So now when I'm choosing those two ends to be, I choose as 3, 2 out of the 5 options, I choose myself. Wait, what? Recursion. And you do it again. And that V goes and splits it and then chooses two ends. And guess what? It might also choose itself. When I push this green button, what's going to happen? Will it run forever? Never stopping? No. It might. It could go on a winning streak and always choose itself and never stop. That's true. It could go on forever. I mean, really, forever, forever. But it also could eventually not choose one of these guys as the end point and just one of these pictures, that'll be it. So watch what happens. Let's just see what happens. Let's see how much time trees it draws. That's pretty cool. It went left, chose V. When that went left, oh, that was just a hex, that's fine. But the right was another V. To right, two more Vs. It's got a 40% chance of recursing at every level. That's really cool. And you don't know, like, every time you run this, you get another picture. I mean, you might get the same exact one, but the point is, for the most part, you get a different scope, like, every time you try to run it.
I think now you can really write a recursive procedure the classical way. I mean, you can have an if, n equals 0, stop, else, run V, run whatever, right?
That's the traditional notion of recursion. Factorial, exists, otherwise you call n times factorial with a smaller number. But this is the same idea, that you're choosing this, and it turns out that happens to be one of the things of mine. It's just really beautiful in a turtle graphics way to do recursion. So I keep running this, and I get different snowflakes every time, for the most part. And sometimes it's really boring, but sometimes it's really awesome, and it gives you that great thing. Okay? Really, really cool. So to make this work, what do we have to do? A lot to go from 0 of what Scratch is right now, the download Scratch 1.4, the vanilla Scratch, we call it vanilla Scratch 1.4, to where we are now. You have to have scripts. You have to have functions as first-class data. Functions have to be able to be passed into blocks or functions or reporters. Functions have to be able to return from reporters. Functions have to be able to be stored in aggregates. Functions have to be able to be stored in other variables, which are normal variables. All these things make first-class variables, make first-class data, and functions are not first-class data. Lists are first-class data. You can make a list of lists. With a list of lists, you can build any data structure. You don't need a button to make a binary tree, a button to make a queue, a button to make a stack. No, a list of lists, you can build your own abstraction. With this generic list, which can hold anything, we have now the power in Scratch, in a Scratch-like world, which Barbie called BYOB, to basically teach a CS1 or CS2 at the undergraduate level because we can make our own data structures and abstract data types. That's really powerful. So we are so excited about this as an idea. Yes?
Did you check whether it is easier? I have no argument with you that for elementary school kids, right? I don't know how far they can go in the question, but they clearly need subroutine, which is a very good opportunity.
Yeah.
But is it better for a college student to then build that rather than this? I'm not so sure. Did you check?
Right, it's a good question. It's a good question. Berkeley's answer is that we are not touching our beautiful CS1 course, which is in Scheme. It's the big idea, it's 15 big ideas of computing, and it's in Scheme, and we do everything. We do 4 programming paradigms in one course. It's amazing. All in Scheme. Just a different library, now Scheme looks like an OOP language.
So what is
another one looks like a logical, the third one.
I know about Scheme. What is the interplay with OOP?
Right. So the point is, this non-majors course feeds into that majors course in Scheme. So, to answer you, Berkeley's answer is, it's not going to replace Scheme in terms of let's get our majors doing real deep computer science. That course is really good. That, we call it 621A. It's modeled up to MIT 6001. It's the intro course, Abelson and Sussman, Structure and Information Computer Programs. It's an amazing course. 15 big ideas, one idea per week. It blows students' minds. It's wonderful. So we love it. We're not touching it. But we are touching the non-majors course to have this. So to do, here's the crazy thing. We are working through our majors course, our 001, our 621A course, and 6P Abelson Sussman, all that work. We already have half the course rewritten in Scratch because this language is now powerful enough to do the big ideas of functions and data and declarative stuff and concurrency, all those things that we're teaching in that majors course. We're now doing half of that course, and I think we could probably do more if we pushed on it, in this language. This language is now powerful, this environment is powerful enough to do what we're doing in Scheme. We're really happy.
Are you familiar with another approach to the same problem, that is not jump in direction to Scheme? Who has a family of schemes, from a daily scheme, and to, they limit the
length. Right. I've seen that.
Scope.
Yeah.
Do you have any comparison between those two?
That is a
thing. Why are you feeling about that?
Right. I think it's Matthias Felsten.
Yes, that's right.
At Rice, I believe, is working on that. The Dr. Scheme folks. And that's a very different, we've known about them for a long time. Independent of this, we've known about the way they teach their course in Scheme, and we know the way we teach our course in Scheme, and we played with it a little bit, but we went back to what we do, which is just to give them all full Scheme. And we do the following, where we have them write different interpreters. We have them do a metric circular evaluator. So they're actually writing an evaluator for Scheme. So they're actually taking in parens and making that semantic and doing something very different. That's what's really cool at the end, we do some declarative stuff. By looking at the same scheme and having that semantic mean different things now. And so all that is still in the same flavor of exposing them to more and more of the language, and now they're writing interpreters, and that interpreter gets more and more sophisticated. So the first interpreter, they have no defines, just a very simple evaluate basically scheme. And then they say, add a define, what if you change your interpreter to make that happen? So we're trying to still do the unwrapping the onion, make it harder and harder by making them do larger interpreters. But that's a little bit different than this in the sense of, this is attacking the non-major space, and that is the innovation we've done at the major level.
But I'm really wondering about this. To what extent graphics, which is wonderful for small kids, is better, is good, or it is standing away of more, a kind of course?
That's a good question. That's a really good question. We realized that in our this course is replacing an existing Scheme course we're not making, which had an end of the semester final project. And I've been teaching that course for many years. And I look at what our kids are doing. You know, at the end of a full semester, the top kids have built a little baby GUI that maybe plays tic-tac-toe, and they've done all of it, the entire thing is built by them. And I'm really proud of that, some of those final projects. Students with this environment, in that other course, the pilot I ran last fall, we're doing that by week 6. They're running the same thing and taking our old students 15 weeks to build, But because of how easy it is to do, to do an interface, to do clicks, and to handle the basics of that, they're doing that in week 6 versus week 15. So this, they're getting something for free. You bring the libraries up to some level, and things are easier to do, right? Ruby on Rails is a great example of the libraries are here. You're doing library stuff, right? So you're not having to rewrite how to do a graphic event handling because it's so easy to do with Scratch. So a lot of that's amazing that after week 6, our students are doing something that used to take our kids to do. Used to take kids to 15. But there's something, what else, what are they getting? What are they doing for 15 weeks? Well, maybe they're just banging their heads against the wall and skiing. Maybe it's just dealing with the syntax of an Emacs. You know, it's interesting what those students are doing 15 weeks. These guys are getting in 6 weeks. The libraries are up here, so there's got to be something else that they're doing that we're missing. They are certainly appreciating recursion more because in Scheme, you have no other iteration capability. You don't have a block which goes over here under control that says, oh, repeat 10. That repeat 10 block in Scheme takes me explaining recursion to you, explains changing it, is a tail or is it embedded, an infinite loop. Repeat 10, you can't make this infinite. Repeat 10, that's a number. So that has allowed us to jump past 2 weeks in Scheme of here's what recursion is and here I can do a simple linear iteration. It's just ridiculous. So
it's very good. This is not just about, I'm asking about the graphic part.
Okay.
I taught this kind of courses to high school students, high school teachers, is low.
Oh, yeah.
And they got very fast to very sophisticated. Logo is, of course, textual. It does have repeat and have recursion motions themselves. What I'm really interested in is the question, is graphics in a way, or is graphics useful? Would I go and program in graphics or program something now?
Right.
Or would I do it with text?
Right. Well, I think it's both in a way and useful. I don't think there's an easy answer either. It's certainly useful in my example of the 60s. How is it in the way? Well, we have a wonderful Scheme testing engine that says, I now want to test my program. Here's the suite of inputs. Here's my expected output. I can say test. And I had this test case. Good luck, testing guy. Right? If I had done this wrong, and now I have all of these in here, and now this goes forever, how do I script a regression testing world? So, graphics is completely in the way of teaching the CS ideas of software engineering. It's not scriptable. So this is BYOB. I didn't say when you loaded up, it was BYOB version something, 299.31 or something, iteration 31. People in my development team helping to write BYOB saying, Dan, how do I verify that version 31 didn't break all the stuff in version 30? We've got 50 labs that are dependent on this. And this, our developer puts out version 31, he might have actually broken 25 of those old labs. How do we test that? I don't have a way. So it's completely in the way in terms of my software engineering, verifying I can put my life on the line and say this stuff still works. But in terms of, it certainly helps me, the fact that my students can write their text out in 6 weeks, which is awesome. And they feel like they understand it. Like they feel like the libraries are there, it's clear enough. I can ask them to write, to explain, it's not like a library like Ruby where I say, like, how did the library work? They say, I don't know how the library worked. They just gave it to me. But they understand, how much more do you want them to say? This thing happens 10 times, right? That they understand everything there is about their program to make the text out play. That's awesome in 6 weeks. But they can't test it. That's a problem. Debugging is an issue. There is some debugging support here, but it's still really hard. So I think that's yes and yes. Some of both. Yes, you have an answer.
So I guess you're trying to broaden the net with this?
100%. 100% broaden the net.
Unlike the calculus AP and the physics AP, where there's still a percentage that'll go into that major. What about for this new AP? Do you see a percentage of people taking this AP still going to computer science? Because it doesn't seem like it
yes,
high
yes,
as much.
Yes. The hope is you give somebody as a sophomore or junior in high school a really great course, and you kind of give them a taste of the good stuff early, and they say, hey, maybe I'm good at this. Why don't I kind of take the next course and see how it works? But if the only thing they had is this really hard, rigorous course in Java, they're not going to jump into that door. It's just too scary for them. But if they kind of get warmed up with something like this, which is fun and joyful and beautiful, you may take people who were intended to be non-majors and make them majors. So the hope of this is you cast this really wide, and we'll get some percentage of those. It's like having an Apple store on the corner, intersection of the main thoroughfare. some percentage of people are going to just walk in the store and buy some stuff that normally wouldn't have done that if that wasn't in front of them. So hopefully this course is fun enough that people who didn't intend to be non-majors say, I'm good at this, this is kind of fun, and walk down the major road. So the answer is yes. The hope is, the goal of this course is broadening participation. AP is measuring me as a pilot. How well did you do in terms of broadening participation? Who came into your course? What's the demographics of all the people who are my 90 students? Interview them a lot. All night you're going to be measured and tweaked and blood samples taken and height and finger and everything measured throughout the whole course. How was it? Did you like it? What was your feeling before the course? What was your feeling after the course? All that stuff is going to pre and post. All that stuff is going to happen. So to know, have we affected anything with our course? That's the only metric of evaluation. So the goal really is broadening the net. Cast it really wide. People who didn't think they were going to do it, and then come on in. As well as majors who already thought they were majors to give them more of a big idea, right? We still have majors who don't have those big idea concepts, who still don't know how Google works, say, right? Who still don't get the big idea, the big seven beautiful ideas. So even if a major takes this course, that's even better, because they kind of get that broad picture before they jump in. They're going to do it anyway, but you're selling, you're preaching to the choir on that one, but we give them that great, great intro, getting them rolling on it, and then they jump into our majors course. So the hope is we do pull people in. We had your hand up a lot.
Maybe two quick questions. Does the same course where not majors in college as well as high school? Right?
Correct. Okay. Yeah. So this is the college course for non-majors that will map my pilot is going to be exportable, and hopefully, you know, you take it, pick and choose what you want, but my lectures will be online. We'll videotape our lectures like you're doing here. You can borrow those if you want. All that stuff is going to be something about high school.
That's the region to call the high school.
Exactly. So they have ownership, and so that when it comes pilot round two, I'm in pilot round one. Pilot round two is another group of high school teachers, high school students. So the pilot round one is all five universities. Pilot round two might involve some high schools which decide to go up. Well, why not have the high schools who were partnered with us and be part of people applying for that? So they're excited to have those people possibly be pilot twos, and that's really exciting.
So the more technical question is, so I was wondering whether when you say first about functions as data, do you mean functions as names of functions or functions as in
I can put an unnamed function.
Okay, so there's such a thing as unnamed function.
Yeah, unnamed function. Yeah. So you want to make one now?
Why? So I guess, you know, I feel that, well, in this sort of strategy scheme debate, there's a lot of things that are, without issues that could be teased apart, and I think there are things that each quote unquote side does that the other side could take. So there's first of all the graphics versus texting that. But you can have repeat ink skipping, if you will. And you can have, as you demonstrated, lambda in scratch. Right? So that's one issue. And libraries is not an issue. And the issue of whether to have growing languages, sort of established growing languages, so you can give a better reference, that's not an issue. And so, and I would expect, one hope would be that you kind of, well, maybe this is what you're currently hoping for. One is that people get so tired of drafting and drafting these
right?
Once they get used to what they want to have, they can like, they put it there. But if you look at the error messages that people get when they start with even scheme, even the not full scheme, but the subset of scheme, right? If you don't know how to give good error messages when people have mismatching premises and so on. And there are no mismatching premises.
Right. You can never have any of those work.
A hint as to, you know, whether something's going to go forever or not.
Right.
Those are. But that's completely dependent of whether you have iterations or recursion. Right. Mm-hmm. And well, so you know, I personally am quite happy to teach, you know, any course. I should have said, maybe just use some keyboard shortcuts.
Maybe switching between tabs. I prefer switching between tabs to keep a shortcut. That's the most annoying thing. Where is the thing? That's the other, like, you know, everything's hidden behind tabs. So where is the hide command for Sprite? I don't remember where it is. Like, there's no way to fit that.
So you complain about testing, but it's not. I don't think you should blame Steam for not having repeat. I don't think you should blame Sprite for not having testing. Right? You can test GUI applications just fine. Your problem is side effects, which you like mutation or correctness, which you need to encapsulate. But you can delay skin, you can delay stress and go here. Now maybe you haven't built it.
Right.
I mean, I think technically it's entirely exactly as feasible as you have done.
No. Why not? It's as feasible, but it's not as easy. I mean, it's really trivial in Scheme to say, is your test a function? Give it some inputs and give me the output.
Yeah, but that's side effects, right? No, but here you can do the exactly same thing.
No, because
the problem is the graphics.
I've shown you an output only thing, but I mean, you could have a very interactive click and drag and things, and drag and clicking mean something semantically. How do I test that? That's really hard.
Wait. So, first of all, this is not Steam versus Scratch, right? Because if you write the same GUI program,
yeah, the same difficulty of doing GUI stuff.
Okay.
And
then now
that's true. That's true.
Okay. So that's not
week 14 stuff. We don't get to the GUI part until the last week or week. You know, or maybe there wasn't. That's just a fun extra thing that he said so they can build the GUI for the final project.
That's not the core. That's not Steam either, right? So you could get to the GUI stuff per se. What you do is an issue, right? Don't blame Steam. Don't blame Scratch.
I see.
Completely or software.
I see. You're right.
Now.
He didn't blame them. He said graphics did. Like,
okay, now don't blame graphics. Don't blame graphics either. Could blame side effects such as input and output. That's what you would say.
Okay.
But even those, you just need a way to encapsulate those.
Sure.
And you can do it in Scheme, you can do it in Scratch.
Even if I live in a functional only world in Scratch, we haven't built it yet, but there really is no way for me to say, for every script that's out there, I don't know how you would, I mean, it's a lot harder to think about how you would, from an interface point of view, say, this is all the guys, all these guys I'm building, these are all fun. This is literally scratching.
Yeah, sure.
How do I test NAN?
Yeah.
Down here, well, I'd have to kind of click on it, open the thing,
your way to having a mechanical translation. Mechanical computer translation from Scheme to Scratch. So anything you have done in Scheme, I don't see how it will translate it.
Right.
So they're completely orthogonal, right? So I would sort of, I think you can do all CS1 in Scratch if you want it, right? If your hand is willing to get,
It's just in a text based language, it's really very simple for me to say.
It has nothing to do with.
It's not so simple, really.
You agree with me?
I'm agreeing with you.
I'm
entirely agreeing with that. Testing of the NAN, right? You have to go through and think of all the possible inputs on which you produce outputs.
You have
to consider what the outputs look like.
Right.
And then the question is, what does your language as a side effect produce output like? And maybe Scheme produces outputs like by printing on the screen.
You have
to capture that.
Yeah.
Here it's produced in a different way, and you have to capture that. But like you were saying, in both cases, the issue of taking that as pure science, abstracting that into something which a test program can match, and say this and that output are the same, whatever the abstraction.
Right.
So now there are different ways to capture a set of outputs, right? So you can either have some kind of language level facility for sort of encapsulating things, or I guess maybe what you're saying is that it's harder to write a metacircular interpreter of Scratch.
Certainly true. Yeah. I mean,
but maybe you should just keep the instead of all this good stuff, just add Scratch programs.
So point taken that we could build an equivalent set of a testing framework here.
Yeah, this is really don't have it yet.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you could have a right click on this guy and say set up testing framework.
Well, I mean, whatever you already have, but there's, I don't know what you have.
Yeah, I don't know what you have.
What I'm having for Scheme is really easy. I had a function that says take as a function's input and then take a list of all the arguments you want to have to it, a list of all the answers you have. It's really simple. So. No, this is an interface.
If you do it here.
I know, that's what I'm saying. When you right click.
You don't even need that interface. You just have a function called test, and you show all this great.
Yeah, I got you. No, I appreciate it. That's well said. Thanks.
Yeah, I wanted your opinion on a totally different topic. I really like what you do with BYOB. It would let students access sort of a lot of the core ideas that you're teaching right now. In a way that's very accessible. So let's say, this is very successful and you have lots of students coming through in this environment that understand, core ideas and abstraction and algorithms. How might you change your introduction to computer science class, given that they already have that? Because clearly they could probably pick up Scheme in a few weeks if they understand this environment
well.
If they understand this environment well, they could pick up Scheme in 3 weeks or something like that.
Yeah.
It would be very straightforward for them. Well, so how might you change
That's something for us to think about.
That they know that.
Right. Right now, what's funny is it's the opposite. You're thinking about how can we leverage this to make the impedance match between the non-majors course and our CS1 course be fluid and easy and dangerous. We're worried about the fact that we took a course. You remember our slide? This is a key slide. This is a slide of the A versus the B here. Okay. Let me just show you what we had. This course was all in programming in Scheme. Non-majors course. That led into the 621A, our CS1 course, programming in Scheme. I can't imagine a better impedance match than an entire 15 weeks of basically the first 6 weeks of the next course just taught, and then you come in and you learn the same thing for 6 weeks, right? I can't do anything better than that. But what's this new world? This new world is half that's going away, replaced by essays and how stuff works and great applications and CS+X. So we are worried right now about our future students. We want to attract, we don't want a bait and switch world where here's the bait of the scratch, how fun this is, and then here is start running on the treadmill of CS1, which is going 100 miles an hour, and Scheme, which you've never seen before. In the olden days, we had all the Scheme, and then we jumped into Scheme for our CS1 course, and guess what? We still had people getting A's in this course, getting B's and C's in our majors course. Yeah? I did a study of, input grade and output grade, and you'd think it would be the same or not, but you people who were on both ends, it was kind of neat to see that data. People who struggled, but then aced it once they got it. Took them a while. It's like those are people like the slow starters. It took them a while to get it, but once they finally got it, they were amazing at it. Those people like a B in this intro class and then an A in the follow-up class, that's pretty cool and why that is. But the majority of people were A's and B's in the intro class and then B's and C's. They kind of basically dropped a grade in the majors class. It got too hard. Like you were good when you were playing the small pond. When you played the big pond with all the majors that are now flowing in from the side, who were programming since they were 5, and you weren't, right? Because you were a non-major course, and you were in the class of people who nobody in that course had programmed before, so that's why you were playing the small pond. You jump in the big pond with people who are all of a sudden in the fast lane of the programming since they were 5, you're dropping in grade, essentially. Our worry is that, well, that was Richard's question, but our worry is that now this new course where we suck out, the first one, there's no Scheme at all, and we take away half of your programming, now higher libraries, right, so you're doing bigger stuff and it's cooler, but you still, the depth of, say, understanding what's really happening in Scheme is not there because you didn't touch Scheme until you got to the new course. We're worried about these 90 people. And we're worried about the bait and switch of these 99 majors who are now dropping a grade and saying, hey, this is the wrong major for me. What am I doing here? And then leaving the door. They're leaving the door in a CS1 class rather than not even coming in the door in the first place. So we don't want to bait and switch. So we're thinking right now, Rich, that we have to have a middle course that is like, here's a little bit of the Emacs, because you're going to be using Emacs and Scheme in there. Here's some Emacsy stuff. Here's a little taste of Scheme and maybe mapping that back to the Scratch. And here's a little bit of kind of a harder project that you do in Scratch to get you a little bit more of the flexing your programming muscles that you had flexed here for 15 weeks solid that you're only flexing here really for 8 weeks, if you think about it, because it's half of the course. So we're thinking of we need a middle course, not thinking about how we can renovate our next one because people are coming from different paths. So that's the problem for us.
Yeah, my intuition is a little bit different than that, but you've taught the intro classes. So, my intuition would be that the Scratch would allow the students to get more of the core essence of the programming and not worry about, I mismatched parentheses or something, or worrying about, a lot of them don't even
that's
know.
That's true. Text editor.
No, they don't know the control A, Y,
right. All those frustrating algorithms
are
not there.
Those frustrating things
are not there.
That
that's
are
right.
Not there.
That's right.
That might make them
parentheses, longer. Quotations, Emacs trouble.
Yeah,
not
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
That's a lot. That's a wasted hours that are not there. Right. The problem is those come back in because there's still a parentheses, quotations, and Emacs in those one core.
Right. But they may have
so
more confidence
see.
having to actually build programs.
Right, that's, just I can see that.
You know, minor problems that I have to get over, not like, why can't I do this?
And the funny thing is, so we had 16 students in our pilot, and I watched a lot of them in their last week. And what they were doing is not adding more programs. What they were doing is they were spending time in Photoshop, making their GUI or game be better looking. So my worry is that with the final result being this GUI game simulation, the look is so key that you're spending dead hours that are not hours contributing toward you as a CSS person editing pixels. I see people editing pixels to make the ball look rounder. Like, not, don't spend your time with that. It's not what we care. I'm not grading you anymore for it. In the back of my right brain is saying, well, that's prettier than it would have been, but the left grade, my grade doesn't change. Like, the hand didn't change at all with the grade, but it looked prettier on the right side. So they don't realize that. But I remember watching my last week, they're all in Photoshop. And that, like, they shouldn't be in Photoshop. So that's, I'm worried about the graphics feature emphasizing the wrong thing. That said, let me take my head off. When I've written some scratch programs, I spend a lot of time in Photoshop making it look good. I need to say that. Because I want to make it look great, right? I mean, I really spent about it, like, tweaking the edge or making it, all right, I actually did that. So that said, you know, it's a very funny thing.
That happens with the database course. They spend all their time on the front end with a pretty picture of the New York Knicks,
yeah,
as opposed to the
right.
But here's my problem question. I think it's been now 15 years since the previous NSF, where we called together the fluency
control. Right. That's Larry Snyder. That's
part of the
crew.
But also painting, brainstorming, great ideas, a book or two, etc.
Where did that go?
That's what scares me about just that this is the one chance we get at it. Those are also pretty smart people, I have to say. Somehow it's never far off, not enough.
Right. I wasn't part of the movement, so I don't know why I didn't catch on. I don't think they had Scratch at it, but I called it the Scratch at this school. They might have had Logo. I don't know if that was part of the fluency movement, so they involved a lot of Logo, but I have never seen the response. I mean, I turned Scratch on to, you know, in high school, to a couple of people on a summer average thing, and they are ravenous for it. I've never seen people jump in to the Scratch. Like no other program I've seen them jump into Scratch. They're excited about that and motivate them to do that. So I think it's something the language can help a lot. The magnificence of that. I hope that we walk on the same path as the fluency folks. Since I don't know what the movement was, I don't know what the results were, or whether they met their
chiefs. There were big ideas. In other words, again, it was attract people to the field because everybody is so focused at the highest level on syntax.
Right.
Because all you get as feedback is I'm writing a program and I'm constantly getting error messages. Right. You know, in math, you don't get error messages, right? Just submit your incorrect solution.
Yeah.
You get one feedback.
It's like the batch submission, right? It's like the old days batch submission, right? I write my program in Fortran, I submit it, I go away. I get graded and it didn't work, so it has to be a math program by math.
But they had all of these things, all the let's present interesting applications of physics, let's talk about AI, let's talk all of those things. But those are the things that I would have talked about. And I think Michael, when he prepared 105, he was basing them on the proposal for fluency. So that's why I'm saying that it seems to me that part of it, the great ideas part of it, seems to me to be quite old. It's not something new.
Right.
Scratch, I agree with you. In fact, my answer to your question is how this would influence the scheme thing would be that you would get an editor like Alpha, where the parentheses are now colored to match the Scratch things. So the control structure, one color parentheses, everything is indented, so you can actually see the control structure, but it's colored parentheses.
Sure. I've seen that from others. I don't know about the movement to know whether they have. It's certainly clear that we're not novel in terms of some big idea in this story. But I don't think it came with an AP exam. I
I know it didn't.
It didn't come with an AP.
So that might be just, you know, that was an initiative of some universities to do that. That might have worked for a population of students who came to those universities. But I don't think it was going to affect the high school flow because the high school folks didn't know about it until they got there.
But
it may have been effective in terms of increasing flow of people into a non-major course. I don't know, right?
Doesn't look like it. Right?
Oh, okay.
You start numbers of people graduating, but it has no effect.
Right. There could be a lot of reasons. Yeah, I have gotten another question. Another question over here. Yeah.
So, how long is the pilot going to last? What's the measure of success? Those kind of things.
Right. Well, the pilots are just a one semester pilot. The measure of success is that we look at that graph of how did this change your feeling about maybe choosing as a major. Another measure of success actually is who I get to walk in the door. You know, if in the olden days I used to get some percentage of folks from underrepresented groups, women and underrepresented minorities, to come to this course to get just get some computing. Well, if all of a sudden that course is sexy enough that a larger group of folks that more represented the Berkeley campus, you know, if you look at the Berkeley campus, it's very heavily Asian and white males who take arts programming courses. So this non-majors course looks a lot more diverse than even just getting computing in front of a more diverse group of people is a measure of success. So part of it is recruiting, part of it is retention of are the folks we're looking at going to stay with the computing course, and overall, are you thinking computing is more exciting after than before? That's the kind of measure of success. And AP is spending a lot of effort to measure us. All five pilots are being scrutinized with a lot of pre-post surveys driven by the AP. College Board is passing on to us and we're passing in front of our students.
What's the three high schools going to do? What's their plan?
That's a good question. So they're looking at all of our curriculum. They're taking the curriculum. So we have almost all of it built this summer. And we're working with them to show you the slide of that. So I've been working with them to... So I've been working with these folks to take ownership of the course, make sure they understand do teacher training, right? So that they're ready to teach this course a year from now. Because it's a year-long course for high schools. It's a semester-long for us in college, but it's a year-long course for high schools. I'm co-teaching this course with Brian Harden this fall, but solo teaching it in the spring. We're limiting enrollment to 90 freshmen only this fall, but opening up to the entire campus this spring. So hopefully, word of mouth, blah, 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 by the spring, I have 500 students taking this course, which would be really great.
So for the AP, what's their incentive for the high school students to take that course, other than just to take it for being interested in it?
High school teachers, high school students?
Students, a year from now, or...
An AP exam is driven by high schools that teach to that curriculum, who send students to a room who take an exam within the year. So their incentive is you get high schools ready teaching this course to test it out on the high school crowd. Mm-hmm. Hopefully one of these three schools will be chosen a fall of 2011 to be official pilot, teaching this year-long course.
Will be officially available for, as a pilot for them at that
Correct.
Time?
Correct. Okay. But the problem is there will be no exam for them. The exam's going to be available in 2015. We're still now deciding whether this works or not. So they'll run a final exam themselves, but they won't, right? And the question is, why would I, as a parent, send my kid to that particular pilot class, which was hard because it's AP level rigor, but doesn't give them anything at college because this situation's not set up yet to give credit? So the hope is this big survey goes to all universities, which say, if we had high schools teaching this pilot, and here's what the pilot would look like. Would you give kind of a temporary, like a grandfather, this is the wrong word, grandfather, but kind of a temporary credit or placement? There's two different things. One is credit is just, you know, you need 360 credits to graduate or something. And placement says you can jump ahead and you can give one or the other or both. So our department controls placement. Our university controls credit. So I have no say on credit. That's where the Berkeley takes AP. That's not me. I control advising and say, yes, that course match articulation-wise matches this course, and so I will give you credit, and you know that's you don't have to take this course. You can jump into that course. I can tell what course it is, that's placement, but the university determines credit, so I have no control of the credit part. The point is, the survey is going to go out and say, will you give either credit or placement for one of these kids taking this test thing? And obviously the answer is yes. If we have a class that matches that, the answer is yes for us. But the survey is going to go across. Then that survey can influence parents at one of these schools and one of these schools around Denver, one of these schools around Charlotte, to tell parents, hey, by the way, here's a list of all the people who have already raised their hand and say, I will give your students credit or placement at my college. And if the list of colleges is really big, then the parents say, no, that's pretty cool. It's kind of like an AP without an AP. But we'll have to trust that the final exam that they give at Josh Paley School in Gunn is, he will say, yes, that's a 4, that's a 3, that's a 5, that's a 2, and the 4s or 5s from Josh. You know, somehow there's got to be a way with no official cross exam throughout the whole country. I have to trust that somehow Josh says, this is a 4 or 5 or not, like that bit is set to 4 or 5
or not. So there's still going to be some incentives.
Hopefully there will be incentives with this survey. The survey is the key to that, so that you incentivize the parents to incentivize the kids to fill those classes. Now, some of the high schools will not have trouble. Some of the high schools have overflowing desire of students taking school courses, and there will be trouble filling 20, 30 students in for a year, but maybe it won't be. And if that's in those cases, you'll pull out the sheet and say, look, I'll give you credit.
What he said about appeal, have you looked into making a computer science course a requirement in high school? Because I think part of the appeal for physics or bio or chemistry for calc, AB calc and physics B, because those are non-major AP tests, is that a math course or a science course is required in high school.
That is something we're looking into. Unfortunately, requirements in high school are all state driven. So you're fighting the same fight 50 different times with 50 different legislators. And it's a difficult fight to fight, it really is. And that's the kind of fight that Jan Cooney is fighting, to try to make sure this course is there and open them up. And make it, but sometimes you could fight the fight at the university level. Or why can't I talk to my administration and say, hey, Berkeley people, make A computing, you have a quantitative requirement, right? We don't have that. We have an American Studies requirement and this, but you can get out of Berkeley without taking a single math. I think there is a minimal math requirement, but I don't think there's a computer. I know that those are computer science requirements. But why? There's a math requirement, but they're not considered the same kind of thing. Why can't there be a computing requirement? Well, because we haven't had a course that's so great that it's been proven great and it can handle the load of all of Berkeley coming into our class. We've got 25,000 undergraduates. Berkeley, I'm sure, is similarly sized. So we cannot handle the load of 25,000 students taking one course. Even, Chem 1A, our main intro, Chem 101 equivalent, has like 1,500 students, and that's like unbelievable to manage. So you can imagine asking, you can start small. I'm not answering your question, I'm kind of talking about another way to do it. There's another way to attack, rather than attack at the high school level, is to attack at the university level, and then start small and say, what if all engineering students had to take this course, or a computing course? Well, the reality is all engineering students already do take a computing course, they're already a requirement. So this course isn't helping there, and that's not changing that. We also don't want to steal students from engineering. We want to steal students from other departments who are undeclared. There's a Letters and Science College, which is basically BA degree. It's a general BA degree you get. That's who we want to steal students from. Not the people who are engineers who are like, it's a zero-sum game. We're stealing from IUR, or stealing from Chem-E, or engineering, but we're stealing from, MECHI. I don't want to steal from MECHI. I want to steal from English or writing or literature or something else who actually has skills in science and just never thought about that as being a great major for them.
Because I think personally, I've never viewed physics as like a mythical kind of thing.
Right.
I took physics because it was required.
Yeah.
I think like right now, computer science is like in the same like department as photography.
And
like,
shop. Right.
Shop.
It is. No, you're exactly right. Across high schools, on average, across the country, CS is an elective just like home ec, just like shop. And that's broken. That's broken. But we can't just change it. It doesn't make any sense to just change it. Say, by the way, Obama would say, I need computer science to be required, and that filters down to all the governors saying computer science is required, because we don't have the infrastructure. We don't have computer science teachers to teach those courses. If you said it's all required, we couldn't do it. We couldn't run those high schools. We have nobody to teach the classes right now. Here's the problem, here's the sad state of affairs, and this is why people who are the haters in the house, who don't think that Jan Cooney's CSNK project will succeed. Why? If you are a talented computer science high school teacher, you're making some amount of money. I don't know if that is, but some amount of money, right? You can double your salary if you go in industry. If you just decide to go work, as a Lehman banker thing, or you work as a Silicon Valley, as a intro QA person with programming, you're making double the salary you were as a high school teacher. Double. So if you've got a family to feed, it doesn't make sense to stay in high school teaching computer science world. Because you have this skill that is marketable, which is why there's a dearth of talented high school teachers in computer science, and they're all working in industry, building their infrastructure. They're the guys fixing the bugs for the software that you use in the cloud. So the reality is, it's going to be really hard for me to continue with a straight face and tell my graduates, hey, by the way, smart Berkeley graduates, go teach in high school and take half the money you could make if you just take the red pill with the blue pill. Blue pill takes you out of Silicon Valley. Red pill takes you to high school. Take the red pill. I can't say take the red pill, because the blue pill is going to feed their family and give them a house in Silicon Valley, and the red pill won't. That's a hard call. So part of it is, this is a very steep uphill climb to increase the number of CS teachers. What it would take is for somebody from above, or take our governor, or your governor, my governor, our president, to say, computer science is important. Like, to him to say, what are we doing producing people in 2010 who don't know how to program, who don't know engineering concepts, who don't, right? If they said it needs to be a requirement, bam, No Child Left Behind has a paragraph that says, computer science has to be part of this. Core requirement, that would be huge. That would be really huge. We have a CS day now. CS Education Week is in December, first week in December. It's pretty cool. Computer science was actually discussed on the floor of the Senate for the first time. That was when they were talking about this whole day and innovative movement. And, you know, we had, the ACM had a connection with somebody who was able to make that happen. So that's cool, but we need leadership from above to realize that computing is a 21st century concept and needs to be in every school and needs to be required of every student. We need to have conversation thinking by everybody at some form. By doing that, you'll get a flow of teachers in. Maybe there's some money stipends to help pay the teachers' salaries to compensate or something for the job they could have gotten. I don't know. It's like paying people not to grow corn, paying people to be a CS teacher, you know, get a little money inside or be a CS teacher, I don't know. The wider net you cast, right, by requiring it, the more wider net you cast, the more people you'll affect who might like it and might come in as a major. And even if you don't get majors, people are just now knowing computing, and that's, you know, we're getting an informed society. That's a great thing. John Powell wrote a book called Innumeracy, which is like, what happens if your entire society doesn't even know the difference between a trillion and a billion? What actually happens if you don't know it? Well, what's the debt? A trillion, billion, same thing. No. Right? But if the society doesn't believe that, has no idea how to do back of the envelope calculations, there's a real loss. It's a real scary thing that leaders, politicians don't know all of these things. I mean, I'm sure people know the trillion, billion thing, but certainly they don't know all the back of the envelope calculations that I'm sure CS people know how to do. And just rough engineering-y things. Well, that produces that can produce some really bad decisions based on that innumeracy. Well, you have kind of the same thing for not being able to think like a computer scientist, not being able to think abstractly, not being able to scale things to infinity, to have a solution that doesn't scale as you go to Google numbers. Right? There are some issues if you can't think about things that computer scientists know how to think about. So I can see an argument for why we should have computational thinking required by everybody. I just haven't seen the leadership coming from above to say it needs to be this way. Because it would happen to change the whole state. Bam, this has to be a new requirement, and then it's there. Right now in California, it's called the A through G requirements. And computer science is not an A through G requirement. If it were, it would immediately affect every single high school in the state. It means like this. If you made it the H requirement, H is not computer science, if somehow that were it, in one day, every principal would be on the job trying to find CS teachers and having a CS course. That would be whatever, but it has some computing course, and that would be huge. So that can come from, big change can come from above, and the hope is with this initiative, you can have enough courses that are good that people can say, oh, you know, we have now the legs to support a mandate from above. That's the key. It's a great point. Do you have a question?
Yeah.
Okay, last question before we're out of time. Thank you for staying. This is great.
Anyway, I totally agree with
the
mandate to high school.
Yeah,
and I took it in high school. I had like 3 years. It was actually taught by a math professor, which is kind of like, I think it was actually going to happen. You would have to retrain people.
That's right.
Because, you know, train them at community college or something like that.
Sure.
That's what he did.
Yeah. That's what often happens.
And I do think that, like, I mean, that's a problem in computer science in general, right? Like, how are you going to attract PhD students when they could walk out and get a job in industry, right? Because, like, you can't. That's the problem, that's the difference between physics or chemistry, right?
Right, sure. You can
graduate with an undergraduate physics degree and walk into industry.
That's right.
Right? You can graduate with an undergraduate computer science degree and walk into industry and be making tons of money. Right?
Correct. So,
and I know Berkeley has this problem, right? The dot-com bubble, and they had to really amp up their money they were paying for graduate students, right?
Well, when the bubble burst, we certainly saw a lot of people coming into our school.
But like during the height, I think across the board it was harder to do.
It's funny. Yeah, I think there's always been a change. I mean, I'll tell you this. We did lose a lot of people who came into our program and were in a year or two and then say, well, I could go make a lot of money, so I'll take a leave of absence, I'll be back. And many of them did make a lot of money, so that was great. Rich and I know some people who did that, right?
Not many came back.
Lots
of leave of absence.
Yeah. So it wasn't that we could get them in the door, it was that we still had, retention was hard. But
and my only other, so I think this is a great, I mean, it seems like a really good idea.
Oh, great.
In my college that I went to, they did a similar class. It wasn't their intro programming or intro CS class. They had a free class that was supposed to be for non-majors.
Okay.
And you kind of attract people. They used Alice. And there's this kind of problem that, like, that, yeah, you can write a cool program in Alice, but like, how is it applicable to your life? Like, did you do anything, right? And so, like, I would have to have a Bryn Mawr did this like thing with robots, and so you had this whole robot and it was like object oriented, right? Like, robot dot turn right, you know, turn right and moved. Okay, that's great. But then, like, if you're not a major and like maybe you did get some abstract principles of computer science, you don't really understand, you don't really know you did or something, and then you move on with your life and like, how is that useful to you, right? Where even if you just had like a simple Java program or something, you had a text file and you counted the number of times Apple appeared, you could see that being useful, right? Like you can reapply that in your real life. If you know some basic Python, like you can go and use that, right?
Sure.
But if you can have a little robot that moves around, that's cool and it's would take a lot to do in Java, right? But it's not applicable, and there's a sense of like when you take a course, it's nice that you feel like you could accomplish something, you could feel like you can apply it, right? And that's the great thing about intro physics course, right? I can go look at a car and tell you how far it's gonna go by acceleration. You know what I mean? That feeling makes students want to take more courses, I think, sometimes, right? You go into EE Lab, you go to circuit, that's cool, you know? And so that's the problem I find with all of these like really graphical high-level languages, teaching them to students, is that they'll take it, they'll write some cool little, game or something that you know that would take them really long time to do, and so it's like, oh, that's really cool. They don't realize maybe how cool that is because they've never tried to do it the other way, and then maybe to them, simple things like counting the number of apples in a text file is cooler because they can apply it. Do you know what I mean? I think the course in my school was like really non-successful because we did have a quantitative requirement. Everyone took it for the quantitative requirement. Very few people followed on, and no one used those skills again. And then the Bryn Mawr program with the little robots, maybe you get more computer science majors, but they don't go on to do other things. They don't have the skills to do summer internships once you program a robot to move around, right? But doesn't Google need that? I mean, even low level, right? There's a lot of internships out there. But if you have some basic skills in programming Python, they'll take you on, or they'll do Instagram. And then they don't feel like they can accomplish something outside of that class. And then they can do something in chemistry and in physics and stuff, and so they don't move on. And so that's my experience. I didn't go through those courses, so I can't speak from personal experience, but I've TA'd them because I've taken it in high school. But that's just something to look out for. And I think the cool thing is you can do things, applicable things in scratch with a little bit of, right? But like maybe even labs that you might not see as cool, but they, you know what I mean? Like get scratched to do some text editing or parsing.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Or
maybe
kind of a tools based thing. I think we were talking about that. You had two courses at 105, and the other course was just like
applications
and tools and feeling comfortable with things, and that's a space where you use your computer as a tool to do something fun for yourself, and that might be interesting.
Yeah.
The point well taken that we shouldn't aim completely all in the graphical world and kind of part of this is our goal was to say relevancy of this course to the student and relevancy of this course to society, right? How is computing in society part of that? The reading assignment that's talking about. You know, when you make Google and you make Facebook and you have some privacy bug, what happens? And that's kind of there. But also computing in you is what problems, asking my students, what problems do you want to solve? And so one of the things we're thinking about is we have two projects. The second project we're thinking of being games with a purpose. So this is Louis von Allen's work from CMU, who talks about writing a game not just for game, not for entertainment sake, but actually for a purpose. So we're thinking about saying, you can do anything you want to, but as long as it has a purpose, it teaches something. So that's kind of neat. There's a little bit of a you know, I always wanted to teach my brother how to play cards at the game of Nim or something fun, and here's a thing that I wrote in Scratch to teach you that. So it's a tutorial for something. It could be a CS concept, it could be a history concept, it could be anything. That's kind of neat. So that's a piece of that that's relevant. But also, each one of our two projects, in the early days of our other course, we used to say, we had 300 students in that class, and we wanted to be able to grade them fairly, so we said, do my project. And my project was a game theory thing, or a tic-tac-toe thing, as I said, or a robot-y thing, Blocks World. But what I wanted to do, and what we did last year, was we had our final project, I don't know if she says it here. Say here, yeah, final project. Their project, doesn't say it, but their project is all their choice. So in our, that's kind of like the relevance to them. So to address the, you don't realize what's relevant and what might be fun for the student, well, what if I let you choose your own project? And you had a discussion with us about difficulty in making sure we gauge you and align you if you're trying to bite up too much of the apple, but that'd be really neat.
Yeah.
If the project is their choice, both of our projects are their choice.
Yeah.
So that's trying to get to that point, trying to get to the relevant to them. But your point was also that, like, silly things, small texty things are useful also and maybe have more legs than a whiz-bang, graphic spinning, sound,
yeah,
motion-y thing.
And
that's true.
And learning a language that you can point to and say that people use, right? Like learning...
Well, that's hard, because Scratch is really not...
That's the problem, you know,
that's the hard part.
That's kind of the problem, right?
Right.
Like with the problem with Alice, too, right?
You can make a fun animation where the skater walks over to the penguin and waves and talks a little story, but what
if they
wanted
to build a website that does some processing in the background,
that's not the wrong tool.
But if you teach them a little bit of, I don't know, Python or something like that, you know, they feel like they have some
ability. So I think that's the job of our next course or other course after that. I mean, the reality is that it's hard because I don't want to give people fishes. I want to be able to hand people a tool that teaches them how to fish, right? So that they could, after one course, be a lifelong learner. The whole purpose of the university is to be spoon-fed, and you never graduate learning how to learn on your own, then your 4 years are done, and you're not going to university anymore, you won't learn anymore, because you never learned how to learn. But if I can teach you in this course how to take a problem that you think is interesting and roll it into a program that's real for you, that's kind of neat. And if I taught you how to do that, then I'm happy. I think that you're ready to go. If I can teach you how to learn a new programming language, like Python or something that's more useful, that'd be great. Teach them how to learn something new would be neat. We're not going to specifically do the Python thing, but we're certainly going to let them say, what problem do you want to work on, and help them massage a little bit, and say, let's have you learn how to work it yourself. Your job is to make it happen. That's kind of neat. So I think we're getting to that a little bit.
Yeah.
And if their project is text-based stuff in Scratch, more power to them.
Yeah.
Right? I have no trouble if their input is going to be this one long variable, which is all of Shakespeare's works somehow in one big variable, and you want to parse that and do something clever with it and build a table and find out how many, you know, I don't know what you want to do with it, but the point is if they just want to do IO-based stuff, yeah, I love it, sure.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to be whiz-bang gooey. Almost everyone's going to choose the whiz-bang gooey just because that's what they like and that's what a lot of students listen to, but if they choose not to, that's fine by me.
Okay, I think Dan's going to stay after for
Yeah,
so thank you.